You know, it's funny how often we find ourselves trying to figure out why someone else is suffering. Maybe a friend's going through something awful. And well, our first instinct, even if we mean well, is often to jump to conclusions. We offer advice, maybe thinking we know exactly why they're in pain. It's just, I guess it's human nature, isn't it? We want to understand, maybe fix it. But sometimes it just adds to the burden. Today, we're doing a deep dive into an ancient text that really tackles this head on. It's a powerful, sometimes difficult section from the book of Job, chapter 22 specifically. And here we meet Eliphaz the Temanite. He's one of Job's friends, delivering his final and honestly his most scathing accusation. Just a classic example of truth, maybe, but truth completely misapplied. Shows the real danger of faulty assumptions. So our mission here is to unpack what Eliphaz is saying, see if there's any, hidden wisdom even in this tough text, and crucially pull out some real modern applications for us. We want to explore how this story, as harsh as it seems, might actually encourage genuine obedience and strengthen our faith today.
Help us navigate our own stuff and deal with others with a bit more grace. Okay, so let's unpack this. We're jumping into Eliphaz's final speech to Job. And remember, Job is suffering immensely, lost everything. Eliphaz isn't exactly gentle here. What's his main point right at the start? It feels less like asking and more like accusing straight away.
Well, yeah, that's what's so striking. Eliphaz immediately lays out his core argument, and like you said, it turns into condemnation almost instantly. He starts in verses 2 and 3 questioning Job's integrity, basically asking, look, can a man really benefit God by being righteous? Does your goodness do anything for God? He's trying to say Job's righteousness isn't some big favor to God, so there must be another reason for all this suffering. And that really paves the way for his absolute conviction that Job's pain has to be because of some massive hidden sin. He goes from that sort of theoretical question straight to a really personal sharp attack in verse 5, asking Job point blank, is not thy wickedness great and thine iniquities infinite? It's a shocking opening designed to force a confession.
Wow, that's quite a pivot. Brutal, really. Like, the verdict's in before the trial even starts. And he doesn't just leave it at general wickedness, does he? He gets specific. He launches into these, like, incredibly detailed accusations, even though Job hasn't admitted anything. What are these accusations? They seem so out of character for Job.
Right. They're completely unfounded. Eliphaz doesn't just hint at sin. In verses 6 through 9, he lays out this whole list of things he claims Job did. He accuses him of taking pledges from his brother for no reason, stripping clothes off the poor, not giving water to the weary or bread to the hungry. It gets worse. He accuses Job of sending widows away with nothing, even breaking the arms of the fatherless. I mean, these aren't small things in that culture. They're serious violations of justice and basic human decency. But the key thing, as you said, is that they're totally baseless. Job never did these things. We know from the start of the book he was blameless and upright. Eliphaz is just inventing them.
So he makes up these awful things and then connects them directly to Job's suffering. So what's the logic there in Eliphaz's view?
His logic is, well, frighteningly simple and deeply flawed. In verses 10 and 11, he basically says, because you did all these terrible things I just listed, that's why you're now surrounded by traps, plagued by sudden fear, stuck in darkness, buried under this flood of troubles. He's essentially drawing a straight line. Your suffering is the direct, natural, deserved result of your own wicked actions. It's a very straightforward, almost mechanistic view of how God works. Sin equals punishment, period. No room for mystery or, other reasons for suffering in his book.
And it seems he has insult to injury, too. Doesn't he suggest Job thinks God isn't even watching? Like God's too high up or maybe blinded by clouds to see Job's supposed secret sins?
Exactly, he does. In verses 12 through 14, Eliphaz almost puts words in Job's mouth, attributing this really blasphemous idea to him. He says, isn't God way up in heaven? Look how high the stars are. Then he suggests Job is thinking, well, how would God know? Can he judge through these thick clouds? They cover him up so he can't see. He's just walking around way up there. Eliphaz is basically saying Job thinks he can sin without consequence because God is distant or oblivious. And then he compares Job to the wicked men of old who were wiped out by a flood because they told God to leave them alone. He's implying Job is on the same arrogant, destructive path. It's a full-on theological assault.
Wow. That is quite the indictment. He really throws everything at him. But then after all that, all those accusations, Eliphaz suddenly shifts gears, doesn't he? He offers Job a way back. What does he tell Job to do? And what does he promise if Job supposedly returns to the Almighty? It feels a bit like whiplash after that barrage.
It's a major turn. Yeah, starting around verse 21, Eliphaz switches abruptly from attack mode to offering this conditional path to restoration. Though, crucially, it's still based on the assumption that Job is guilty. He urges Job, "Acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace, thereby good shall come unto thee." And then he lists this whole stream of blessings that will flow if Job just repents and accepts God's law. He promises Job will be built up, that he'll put away iniquity. He talks about incredible wealth. Job will have gold like dust, silver like the sand of the seas. Job will supposedly find delight in God again. His prayers will be heard, his vows fulfilled. Eliphaz promises that whatever Job decrees will happen, light will shine on his path. And more than that, when others are down, Job will be able to lift them up, and God will save the humble and even deliver the innocent through Job's own pure hands. It's this complete picture of restored status, wealth, influence, divine favor. All yours, Job, if you just confess the sins Eliphaz made up.
Right, right. Okay, this is where it gets really fascinating. Because it's so easy to just write Eliphaz off as being totally wrong, maybe even cruel. But our sources hint there's actually some profound wisdom buried in this chapter, even within that flawed speech. It's like finding something valuable in a really unexpected judgmental place. So what are some of those deeper truths we can actually pull out, even from his messed up delivery?
That's a really good way to think about it. You're right. Even amidst Eliphaz's, well, misguided attack, there are these flashes of generally true theological ideas. The first big one is that misapplied truth can be incredibly damaging. Eliphaz says things that, on their own, are true, like, God does bless those who repent, injustice does anger God. But he takes these general truths and just slams them onto Job's specific situation without any evidence. He weaponizes them. And that's such a powerful warning for us, isn't it? How often do we maybe hear someone use a correct principle, but use it to condemn someone else? It's taking something true and twisting it into a personal attack, totally missing the empathy piece.
Yeah, that hits home. It's not just what you say, but how and why and who you're saying it to. Makes you wonder what was really motivating Eliphaz deep down.
And that leads right into the second insight. False accusations often reveal a limited understanding. Eliphaz's whole argument rests on this faulty foundation. Suffering must equal guilt. He just can't imagine suffering happening for any other reason. This points to something critical. Suffering and sin aren't always linked in that simple one-to-one way. Eliphaz had this very common but incomplete view of retribution: good things for good people, bad things for bad people. And that limited view just blinded him. He couldn't see Job's reality or feel compassion.
So it's kind of stuck in his own neat little theological box, projecting it onto Job instead of actually listening or trying to understand. And that sort of limited view can lead to a pretty shallow faith, right?
Absolutely. Which brings us to point three. Superficial religion often misses the heart of God. Eliphaz's approach is very transactional. It's all about external actions and formulas. Do this, confess that, and boom, God will bless you. It's like a quid pro quo. That's so different from Job's struggle, which is much deeper. It's about relationship, trust, trying to grasp God's character, even when nothing makes sense. Eliphaz's view just bypasses the whole relational core of faith, reducing it to a checklist. And then, ironically, the fourth point, even in this flawed rebuke, Eliphaz says something incredibly profound in verse 21. Acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace. Now, his reason for saying it was wrong, his delivery was harsh, but the core idea, it's deeply true. God desires relationship, not just rule following. That call to acquaint yourself with him isn't about earning brownie points. It's an invitation to know God personally, deeply. It's about understanding his character, trusting him, finding peace in that relationship no matter what's going on around you. It's almost like a moment of accidental wisdom, you know, tucked inside his judgment.
That's amazing, really, how he stumbles onto such a core truth while trying to condemn. Accidental grace, I like that. Okay, so we've pulled these ancient lessons out of Eliphaz's, well, pretty faulty counsel. We found these nuggets of wisdom. How does this translate for us today? For you, the listener, navigating all the information and relationships in our world, what are the practical takeaways here that can actually strengthen our faith and maybe encourage a more genuine kind of obedience?
Oh, the modern applications are huge, I think. First off, we really need to avoid making assumptions about why people are hurting. Just like Eliphaz, it's so easy to rush in and interpret someone's hardship as, you know, a direct result of something they did or didn't do. Someone loses their job. Oh, they must not have worked hard. Someone's sick. Maybe they didn't take care of themselves. Job 22 is a huge reminder to just listen more, judge less, and definitely avoid playing spiritual detective. We don't know the whole story, and blaming often just makes things worse. Second, we need to be really careful with half-truths. Like we talked about, Eliphaz said some things that were generally true, like, return to the Almighty, he'll be built up. But the way he applied it was totally destructive because it lacked empathy. Think about giving advice from, say, a self-help book. The advice might be good in general, but if it completely ignores the person's unique situation, it can be really damaging. Truth without grace isn't the whole truth. It matters how and why we say things.
That difference between a universal truth and its specific compassionate application that feels really key. It shifts things from being about rules to being about relationship.
Exactly. And that flows into the third application. Don't confuse restoration with the transaction. Eliphaz promised blessings, Job just repented. That fits that common, almost vending machine mentality. Put in good deeds, get blessings, do bad, get punished. But that really flattens out what real faith looks like. God isn't just a cosmic ATM. Real restoration, real blessing, as Job's whole story shows, it's relational. It's about connection with God, not just a score sheet. This helps us build a deeper faith that isn't just quid pro quo. Understanding God's goodness isn't solely based on our performance. Fourth, and this is so important, use encouragement, not condemnation, to point people towards God. Eliphaz had this golden opportunity to comfort Job, maybe remind him of God's faithfulness, even in the confusion. Instead, he tried to shame him into confessing sins he didn't commit. In our own lives, with our friends, family, whoever, we should aim to be people who build others up with grace, offer understanding. That approach actually strengthens faith. It encourages a genuine, loving obedience that comes from gratitude and trust, not just fear. And this loops back to how this all encourages obedience and strengthens faith today. When we grasp God's character beyond Eliphaz's simplistic formulas, when we really take that call to acquaint ourselves with him seriously, well, our obedience starts flowing from love and trust, not from fear, not from trying to earn points. Our faith gets stronger because we learn to trust God's goodness, his sovereignty. Even when things make absolutely no sense, it boils down to knowing God personally. And that brings a kind of peace that goes beyond circumstances, empowering a real heartfelt obedience. That's way more profound than just following rules out of fear.
Yeah, this whole look at Job 22 really does shine a light on the huge difference between like a surface level rule following faith and that deep relational connection with God. Eliphaz's mistake is a powerful reminder of how easy it is to misjudge, misapply truth, and how vital empathy really is when we engage with someone else's pain.
Yeah.
It really comes back to building trust, fostering that real relationship with God that isn't just based on whether things are going well or badly, but on who he actually is.
Absolutely. That's the core of it. What God truly desires, no matter our circumstances, is that we would genuinely know him, that we'd acquaint ourselves with him. The peace that flows from that restored trust, from a relationship built on understanding him, loving him, that's the real blessing.
Yeah.
It's not about earning his favor. It's about embracing who he is and finding our stability just in him.
Which leaves us with a question for you, our listener. Have you ever found yourself maybe making assumptions about someone else's pain, perhaps offering advice that, even if well-intentioned, ended up being hurtful? What did that experience teach you about the power of empathy and maybe the importance of simply being present rather than trying to fix everything?